Welcome to the JD Bunkus Podcast.
People are mad at Vladdy.
My sense is that there's been an undercurrent of this for quite some time. But the Blue Jays were on a winning streak, and so who wants to talk about it? I want to talk about how fun Barger is, how great Springer's resurgence has been, how gutsy a lot of these comebacks have been, how fun it is beating the Yankees, sweeping the Yankees, Jimmy Campbell versus Michael Kay. There's like a billion things that you want to do before going into like, hey, well, this is not, what's up with this a little bit? And then yesterday happens. Jays lose, winning streak is snapped, and yeah, it's like, you know, I have my formula for war, right? When I watch a game, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy gave you a win. That's a plus one war. This guy cost you a game. That's a minus one war. I respect the baseball savants, those who were able, the Blake Murphys of the world that can put together these incredibly dense formulas with all these different numbers to grade it out. Yeah, deep found respect. I was like a C plus math guy in high school, and I had a tutor. So come on. I'm looking at some of this stuff and this is, it's tough. It's tough for me. Okay. I'm basically just trying to memorize what these things are. Yeah, I get it. Minus one war yesterday for Vladdy. Grounds out into a double play to start the game. Tough one. Makes a couple errors on the base paths. Tough. Just not a good game for him. Minus one war. And so the little grumblings, the little murmurs, they come a little bit closer to the surface. And here's what I'll say. I think that this has just been a tough start to $500 million, right? We can just all agree with that. It's not anywhere close down the line of judging this contract. It's very early. But my overall sense when I talk to people, and that includes going to baseball games and chatting with fans and interacting with people online, is there seems to be like almost a worry of when this is going well and that things are turning a corner for you, that you still need this guy in the middle of your lineup to be dangerous and hit for power. And those very same Blake Murphys, and I say that complimentary, who will show me all the numbers, have one consistent thing with Vladdy year over year over year, even though when he's struggling, it's like, but his numbers. Look, his expected slugging and his hard hit rate and his barrel rate and all this stuff. And I just don't know if he's a power hitter. Do we still have a lot of hopes? I kind of am just accepting him for who he is. The base running stuff sucks. I get that. It's super frustrating. I'm even in the point where I was actually a little pleased with him yesterday because I went, hey, at least he was mad at himself. At least he looked disappointed. At least we got that camera shot where he could only see his sad eyes. After he made, I think it was the second error on the base paths. No, it was the first. It was after he got picked off at third and trying to extend that thrown away ball, which, by the way, I didn't think was so awful, but who cares? I just am trying to accept him as a guy who is not a huge power hitter. But contextually, I think that it's been a tough start simply because, one, Juan Soto, he's been good. He's been much better lately. But almost automatically, that contract, people went, whoa, maybe this was a huge mistake. $750 million for this guy who started his relationship with the team going, I miss the Yankees, and struggled. And you got Frank the Tank online every day going that he's going to go 0 for a million and doesn't make the All-Star team. And then now has bad PR because he's talking about how he's mad he's not getting more money by not going to the All-Star game. You had the Devers thing where when he gets traded, a lot of smart people around baseball went, well, it was good of the Red Sox to be able to get off this contract. And I think for Blue Jays fans, they went, whoa, wait, if Devers, who's crushing the baseball right now, yeah, okay, character stuff that Vladdy doesn't have. If that's a bad contract at, what is it, 350? Then what is Vladdy's? And now you're kind of watching the season where the team has been great and Vladdy's just been okay. And they've gotten by in spite of that. But the undercurrent feel to me is you don't want to have this guy end up costing you games. And over 162, those ones are going to happen. And so for me, it's kind of like a bit of a throwaway, but it's the larger trend where you got that little feeling of unease. Jeff Blair is the co-host of the biggest Blue Jays show in the country, Blair Barker. You can listen later today. He joins me now. What's up, Blair? How are we doing, buddy?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So, yeah, you connected early. So you heard a little bit of that opening monologue. I'm curious where you're at with the Vladdy discourse right now, because, yeah, it's like we're in the midst of all of these positive vibes where the team is punching way above their weight, way above expectation. And yet the one guy who's kind of like, I would say a little under where those expectations are supposed to be, and maybe even a little bit more than that, is Vladdy.
It's funny. Yesterday on Blue Jays Talk, following the game, we got our first. I've been waiting for this text for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been waiting patiently for it. I didn't want to even mention it because I didn't want to like rattle the cage or anything. So finally, and it took somebody from Halifax to text in and say, you know, Vladdy's just like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and John Tavares.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and I've been waiting for that. I've been waiting for that. I've been waiting for Vladdy to be Marnered, right?
Yeah,
and Vladdy Marnered or Matthews or Tavares or however you want to describe
it. Just trauma bonding across sports. I guess. Okay,
exactly.
You get it. Yeah.
It was inevitable. And lo and behold, the guy from Halifax, you know, God love him, finally texted it in without me having to prompt them. I mean, here's the way I view Vladdy. And once you sign a contract like that, it is impossible not to view the player in the context of the contract. I mean, it just isn't. You can say you're a smart sports fan and this and that, but when a guy signs a contract that sees him, what, I'm just looking at the breakdown, he's going to be making $40 million next year. When a guy signs a contract like that, everything he does is viewed against the contract. My approach with Vladdy has been, this doesn't bother me in the slightest. And for a couple of reasons. Everybody who signs a contract like that is theoretically overpaid, you know, even though you can get into the hole, you can get into the weeds. And I mean, is a guy really overpaid? You use the NBA model, LeBron making a lot of money. You can make the point LeBron is actually dramatically underpaid, right? What he's done in his career, what he does to the team, all that stuff. With Vladdy, my only concern when this contract was signed was, okay, will this preclude the Blue Jays from doing other things? That's what I worry about when a guy signs a big contract. I don't really care whether it's $15 million more than he should be paid or, you know, how much he should be paid based on WAR or anything like that. My point of view is always, is it going to have long-term ramifications for the team? And from where I sit anyhow, based on what I've seen from this ownership group, and there's certainly no indication that this ownership group is going away anytime soon, far from it. They don't seem like, you don't hear any rumblings behind the scene that, you know, boy, I mean, this contract 6 years down the road, holy cow, you know, we're going to be like trying to cut back on the light bulbs to pay for this. You got that when the Jays signed Vernon Wells to their contract. You sort of had people behind the scenes saying, I don't know how this is going to age. And boy, if we have to pay Vernon this much, that means we're probably going to have to cut back elsewhere. And you just don't get that sense from this organization. So that's kind of the way I view this contract. It's not going to prevent the Blue Jays from doing what they have to do. I don't think we're ever going to hear the Blue Jays say, yeah, you know, we probably could have added another starting pitcher in the offseason, but, you know, we're paying Vladdy $38 million. So that's my first inclination whenever a deal like this is signed. And then I get to, if you don't have Vladdy next year, you are going to have to replace him. And this is where I think the fans of this team have enough concerns about this front office. I think a lot of them were thinking, okay, yeah, you know what? I mean, Vladdy's problem. Maybe we shouldn't give Vladdy that money. Maybe we could actually be better if it was somebody else. But we really don't have confidence that this front office could go out and find Vladdy's replacement. Right, because to find Vladdy's replacement, you're probably going to have to go out and sign somebody to a big name. You're going to have to sign a free agent to a big contract. I mean, they've been able to do it with pitching. They really haven't been able to do it with a position player. Like, I don't consider Anthony Santander to be, I mean, he was a nice free agent this year in this market. I don't consider him to be, like, necessarily a game-changing free agent. So that's kind of where I looked at it. One, it's not going to prevent the team from doing anything it needs to do in the future. And two, I don't know if this front office would be able to replace Vladdy. I don't know if they have enough to trade just to replace what Vladdy is giving you right now, or theoretically what Vladdy will give you in an average Vladdy year. So
yeah,
I wish I could get really upset and say I can't believe people are dumping on Vladdy, or get upset and dump on Vladdy myself, and I just kind of can't, because the team's winning, and I think at some point he'll start hitting. Is he going to be the same guy he was this season where he was an MVP candidate? Maybe. Maybe not this year. Maybe next year. He is 27 years old. Maybe he is never going to be that good again. But even in a bad Vladdy year, you should be able to put a team around him that contends. And most importantly, his salary shouldn't prevent you from doing anything. I know that's a long-winded answer, but that's kind of where I am with him. Like, I'm just, and Barker gets all upset and thinks I'm an idiot. And I say, and sometimes I just trust the athlete, and I just think that this guy at some point in the next couple of years is gonna have a real good year.
So I'm with you on a lot of this. Like, there's no sense of it's going to prevent them from doing something. Like, one of the things that I would say probably sucks the most right now about being a Red Sox fan is that you keep making these moves about getting money off the books, and it feels like it's going to continue for you, right? You go,
yes.
Well, what happens if Roman Anthony is a stud and he needs a big contract and you're 3 years into the contract, or are you going to sign it? Are you going to flip? Like, now you do have to live with that uncertainty as a franchise, something that you probably didn't expect as a Red Sox fan, as early as what was Mookie Betts, 2020? So 5+ years ago, you were thinking, okay, there's a sustainability with the money that's going to make us different than other franchises. I think that's correct for the Blue Jays. Like, there's no, you know, it's nice hearing it from somebody like you where it's like, yeah, there's no grumbling right now about, hey, this is going to cost us. And then you think about the money that's coming off the books the next couple of seasons with some of the pitchers and Springer, and you go, yeah, of course, this makes sense. The second thing you mentioned, which is, what were they going to do in terms of replacing him? I also agree. I'm like, the Blue Jays already went out in free agency and tried their hand with the Sotos and with the Shoheis. They came up short. They weren't able to do it. It's not the model for this franchise either to just be able to say, we'll outbid everybody and do the Mets thing and just end up paying such a ridiculous, or Dodgers, such a ridiculous top dollar contract that you're going to overlook other factors and come to the Toronto Blue Jays. Yeah, they signed Springer. Yeah, they signed Gausman. Yeah, they've had success in free agency, but not to like that level. I think that Vladdy is the face of your franchise, that fans love him. He's recognizable. He clearly has a cultural impact on the team. Like, he's still the guy that, you know, they win the ball game the other day and everybody's flipping their hats backwards and going like, hey, we're like Vladdy. So there's all this stuff that I'm with you on, and I don't think that it's like a bad contract. What I think I'm more curious about is, well, actually a couple things. One being the thing that you mentioned about, hey, when he has a good season and whether he can live up to that old expectation. I don't think people are expecting him to be MVP Vladdy the 2021 year, but when your team is really good and he is just like a guy, I do think that there's like a bit of an added pressure on the player. And that the narrative around the guy changes a little bit. And he is someone that people have, and this is myself included, I shouldn't just do the people thing. I've wondered, hey, what happens when the stakes get a little higher with this guy? Because he's had these moments where he's raked when the season has basically been out of hand. He raked during the COVID year in minor league ballparks and then did it when he did come back as well. But when the pressure has gotten high, we've seen some of these stretches where he's really struggled. And so I'm looking at it going, man, if the narrative starts to turn on you a little bit, if people start to grumble when you come up to the dish and they're going, man, 12 home runs still. And then you have to get this whole thing of, well, he hits the ball hard and expected slugging, but the ball's not going over the fence with real regularity. Like, what's he on pace for right now? 25 home runs? Even that? Yep. No, less. We're somewhere in
slightly
that.
Slightly less.
Right. I'm more curious about, what the fan sentiment ends up being if the team is good, but he doesn't end up being an ultimate elevator.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing you have to keep in mind with, with some of the underlying numbers, as people keep referring to them, underlying numbers. I mean, the thing about underlying numbers is they can basically tell you anything you want them to tell you, right?
Yeah, they're Michael Moore stats. And,
yeah, exactly. They're that's. That's kind of the way it is with analytics. You know, the deeper you go into a player's performance, the more you can come up with numbers that suggest that he's really not that bad a player. And, part of it is every front office. What is the first thing every front office wants to do? Ensure that it keeps its job. It's the same in any organization, right? I mean, there's that kind of that default position. The first thing you got to do is, I like my job. I got to make sure I keep my job. So there is an element of that. And anybody who says there isn't is just, that doesn't understand human nature. There's an element of, we've got to come up with numbers that show we know what the hell we're doing. And that's fine. But I think Vladdy's kind of a unique case because it's a classic example of perfect timing. You talked about the Jays taking a run at Soto, taking a run at Ohtani, and not getting them. Jays fans, I think, had become used to always being bridesmaids when it was right when you were talking about big name free agents. And I think Vladdy's importance to this organization in terms of marketing and things of that nature, I think it's almost more the casual fan who needs the face of a franchise than the hardcore fan. And I really think Vladdy and his agents found themselves in a unique position where, the ownership was obviously willing to spend money. They've got a new ballpark and they're coming off a down year in attendance. They're trying to fill the park. It's a TV product. They're conscious of their TV ratings. And I think when you look at it in totality, Vladdy's importance to this organization and what he represents to this organization really goes beyond what he can give you on the field.
No question.
And I think his agents saw that. I think his agents, that handled the situation pretty well. I mean, good grief, they got pretty much what they wanted without having to go to free agency. So I just think it was a combination of things that allowed this contract to come together. But you also hit on something, and Vladdy may not be the type of guy who single-handedly carries you to a championship. But I think he's a guy that can be really good with a really good lineup around him, because we saw that when he had Semien and Teoscar and Gurriel and and the other guys that were there, and Bo had a good year, and we saw how effective that lineup was. So that also gives me confidence that with a good lineup, I think Vladdy will produce more offensively. But I just don't know if he's the guy that necessarily single-handedly carries you someplace. And you also touched on something else that I think ultimately for Vladdy's contract and for Vladdy's career with the Blue Jay to be judged a success, there has to be postseason success. That is, that's the measuring stick. That became the measuring stick in this city as soon as 2015 happened. Expectations in this city were no longer meaningful games in September. Expectations were playoff games, maybe winning a playoff series. I mean, look, winning a World Series, you get to the World Series and anything can happen. You get to the ALCS or the NLCS, anything can happen, whether it's pitching matchups, whatever. Anything can happen when you get there. But I think the very least people expect from Vladdy during this tenure is at least a couple of appearances in the ALCS. And whether or not he's the guy that takes him there, or whether or not he's the guy that goes off in the postseason, having him on teams that have a little bit of playoff success, that will ultimately be how his contract is judged. And there's one other aspect of Vladdy's contract that I think people need to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Vladdy's really popular with his peers.
Yes.
Not just in the Blue Jays clubhouse, but around the game. And I'd be willing to bet that having Vladdy talk to potential free agents in the offseason, or get involved in the process to that degree, that's not the worst thing for this organization. If you've got a fairly high-profile Latino free agent coming up, you could do worse than having Vladdy make the phone call, or having Vladdy invite him over to his place in the Dominican, things of that nature. So I think there's a lot more that goes into Vladdy and Vladdy's contract than simply his performance on the field. And I know I sound like I'm making excuses for him. I'm not. I expect more from Vladdy. But I also think I'm realistic enough and understand the dynamics of putting together a baseball team and a baseball organization enough to realize that at some point, things just happen, and timing happens, and it just works out that it's almost like these forces just kind of pull each other together, and you end up with this type of contract. And I think that's where we are with them.
Yep. I don't think many people doubt the ancillary stuff, right? The things that you mentioned there were hey, he's popular with other players. That could end up having an impact. He's popular with his teammates. That ends up having an impact. His importance to the marketing of this team, and even the belief with this team of, to your point earlier about how, hey, if the contract starts telling you to shut the lights off, I actually think he's an embodiment of the opposite, which is, hey, you signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's a signal that you want to be relevant over the course of this entire contract. Yes. It's not, hey, we're signed. It's to your point, not the Vernon Wells deal where you're like, all right, we got a guy, we proved it to the world, but we're dying here to get off this immediately. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have this on our books. The only actual contract question that I haven't asked this to anybody. I feel like it's maybe a really stupid question, but I'll ask you. So you've got guys now, like, David Sampson does your show a lot. Mm-hmm. You have Ken Rosenthal saying this. There's this real belief that there's going to be a lockout a couple of years from now, like before the next CBA, the players are going to lock it out. And I think Rosenthal put it as the owners have never had a thirst for a salary cap greater than now. And I learned from Sampson that you only need a block of 8 owners to lock out the league. So I'm going and looking at this and saying, damn, those middle market teams, a couple of these guys, maybe even some of the big boys, because maybe it's them that want to prevent this kind of spending, maybe save themselves from themselves. But how would this work in terms of taking all these deals like the Vladdies and Sotos of the world and then applying it to a world where there's a cap?
I think the easiest answer is there'll be some type of cap and some type of floor. And I would imagine, I'm still not entirely convinced that when push comes to shove, you would necessarily get
I hope not.
A hard salary cap. I do too. Salary caps
suck.
Especially if you're in this market, I've never understood people who, we need a salary cap. Salary caps are great for sports. No, they're not. If you're in a big market, you don't want a salary cap. You want your team to be able to spend $1 billion on payroll if they want.
No, right? Leaf fans have figured this out, Blair. Like, they're not into the salary cap. There's hell yeah, salary cap.
No, but it took a while. I mean, everybody thought the salary cap was going to be a great thing because it was going to sort of level the playing field. And this is the thing with baseball. Baseball's playing field is fine. It's leveled. It doesn't need a salary cap. But all that aside, I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty contentious negotiation. Even with the salary cap, though, I think there will be ways to account for these bigger contracts, whether it's they'll be grandfathered or they'll be assessed at a certain value. I think ultimately you would need that, because it's not just one or two or three or four or five teams that have big contracts. There's, you know, take a look at every team's got huge contracts, right? I mean, with the exception of the Colorados maybe, or Chicago White Sox, or the Oaklands, a lot of teams have big contracts. So I think there's always a way around that. And I also think that there are enough smart people running the big teams in baseball that they have a pretty good sense of where the negotiations will be going. And I don't think they would be entering into these deals if they didn't think there was some sort of out clause, or if they didn't think there was going to be some sort of dispensation granted.
Right. The Blue Jays aren't going to get surprised by this, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, this is the worst contract in baseball.
No, that's kind of not the way Rob Manfred and the commissioner's office works. There's a reason they have regular owners meetings, and there's a reason that every owners meeting contains an update on negotiations. Part of me thinks that we're hearing right now, the reason we're hearing so much about a salary cap is tactical, because the commissioner's office knows the Players Association, quite frankly, is in a bit of a mess right now. There's some issues surrounding Tony Clark. There's some legal issues involving the Players Association. There's, I think, real concern in the Players Association about what appears to be a growing split between younger players and some of the older players in the union. Let's keep in mind that during the last CBA, the player reps urged the players to vote against the agreement. Almost all of them urged players to vote against the agreement, and the players voted in favor of the agreement. So part of me thinks that this is tactical on the part of the commissioner's office as well. Sow some doubt, create some more friction within the Players Association, create some more fractures between the various groups in the Players Association. And, you know, that's sort of fair play in bargaining, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, I understand these billionaires want to win deals. And if they feel, many of them anyways, that the salary cap is going to be good for their pocketbooks, that's going to be the thing they fight for. But as a fan of all sports, I can tell you that one of the advantages this league has right now is the non-salary cap in terms of fan engagement. And you don't want to have a conversation about a guy's contract and whether he's paid to, like, it's exhausting with hockey. It's exhausting. The NBA had what I thought was a great system with their luxury tax and their bird rights contracts and the ways that you could retain players and keep teams together. Boston Celtics won a championship a year ago, and now they've completely obliterated their basketball team, in part because they look at it and go, well, we can't be in this second apron thing because that doesn't allow us to make trades, and then it can't allow us to take in certain salaries. And the league has had, I think, seven different champions in seven different seasons, so they're getting their, oh, well, there's parity thing. But the league was not supposed to be built on parity, and I think most fans feel really frustrated by it, going, wow, even the Thunder, you get to enjoy your championship, and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander signs this monster deal, and you're immediately looking at losing multiple depth pieces from your organization and saying, well, maybe our championship window is actually only three seasons. That sucks. Fans don't want to be cap managers. Some of them do. Let them go play the video game, the franchise mode, where you get to be GM mode. That's great. Most of us just want to be able to enjoy the game, watch it from a day-to-day product, and hope that your team wins a World Series. And then if you are able to assemble something special, that there can be continuity with that and pressure on a billionaire, some type of civic pressure to say, hey, we want to have this in our city. And it's working for the Blue Jays right now. And so the idea that baseball would lean against that from an entertainment standpoint, why? So the Pirates can have a better shot, who haven't cared about their baseball team in, what, two decades? So that the Tampa Bay Rays can have a better, like, I just, the idea of selling it to fans, like, we want to be able to give everybody a shot when you already actually have that, and these teams are reaping in these massive luxury tax bills, nothing is more infuriating to me. Like, the idea that I'm going to lose baseball games over that, because potentially the Chicago Cubs owner doesn't want to fork over money for PCA. That it just it aggravates me to no end. They might really I won't say they'll kill the Golden Goose because I don't think any of this stuff is unkillable or is killable, but I think that they'll do more damage than maybe they realize if it's an extended lockout that results in, hey, we're just like the other leagues now.
Yeah, and I will say this. I mean, one of the things that Rob Manfred has said, and I mean, it's one of the reasons I really like Rob Manfred, because sometimes he says stuff that's so blindingly obvious, right? That no, you know, his point is, yeah, we can lock them out in the off season, and no one's losing money.
Yeah,
it's you know, I mean, if you, and that's essentially what happened the last time they went nuclear at a time of the year. I mean, what happened? Free agents couldn't sign. Okay, so that's a bit of a downward, you know, that's not a good thing, because now all we're talking about, instead of where's Juan Soto going to sign, we're talking about when are these lawyers meeting in New York to come to conclusion. But his point was basically it doesn't cost us anything to initiate a labor action in the off season. Yeah, we miss a couple of games in spring training. We make it up here or there, or maybe we play a 154 game schedule. So I hate to say it, but I think we're almost at the point now where we're just going to have a lockout every CBA just because it's kind of part of the way things are going to be negotiated. But I'm with you about, listen, I mean, I've covered baseball for a long time, and I cannot remember a time where there is less stress about player salaries than now. I mean, obviously someone is an imminent free agent. People talk about it a lot, right? A guy's an imminent free agent in a small market. Are they going to trade the guy at the trade deadline to get some pieces? Are they going to hang on to him? But it's not as all encompassing as it seems to be in the other sports. The NHL, you got teams playing shorthanded. You've got teams playing shorthanded in games because they're up against the salary cap. And yeah, I love what Kevin Love said 2 days ago, which, I mean, I'd love people to put this in a T-shirt. And he said on X, wait, so now I've become a math problem? And I thought that was just, you know, that was kind of expressing my sentiment. All of a sudden, a guy becomes a math problem because of, you know, salary cap machinations. But
yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. I tend to be a little more optimistic than a lot of people when it comes to baseball labor, because I think the players have changed as well. I think there's less. I think players are generally a little less. What word would I use? Not reactionary. I think players, much like society in general, probably tend to skew, and I'm talking about baseball players, tend to skew a little away from, you know, let's get the picket signs up, let's hit the picket line, you know, union solidarity, et cetera, et cetera. I think the players may be a little more selfish than some of the players that we've seen in the past. And that generally means that at some point the players will, if not necessarily cave, they will certainly
bend more.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. But you know what? Bend faster is how I would put it. And so I'm not certain this group of player, you know, would be prepared to shut down a season the way they did in 94. I think the culture's different. You know, the money's a little different. I just think guys are wired differently, and you know, they're also younger, and younger guys tend to have a little they tend, I think, to be a little bolder, younger athletes, when it comes to stuff like this.
When you're talking about the stress around contracts in baseball, all I can think of too is, like, the last 5 years, I would say there's been, probably around there, maybe even a little bit more, there's been no conversations about, like, remember how often you would have to do, and the death of baseball, and here's the average age of the fan, and what's the future of the sport, and will people go to the ballpark anymore? And now it feels healthier than it has since, like, the home run chases in the 90s. Who's talking about the death of baseball? It's awesome. It's in this amazing place. Like, don't screw it up. Just keep it going the way it is. Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it is honestly the easiest advice that you can give these owners right now.
Yeah, the you know, the rules changes have made the game. I think they've made the game better.
Way better.
By and large. I can't believe I'm saying this because originally I thought the idea of an ABS system was awful. But having seen it in spring training, I'm excited that it's going to come in. They're going to use it in the All-Star game. I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's going to add a new dimension to the game next year. You know, the attendance numbers are going in the right direction. You know, part of the issue with baseball is you always used to worry about one. They're losing the younger audience, and two, oh my God, the TV revenue isn't keeping pace with other sports. Well, you know, baseball teams have figured out there are other ways to derive revenue than worrying about your national TV contract, right? Take a look at the Rogers Center. Take a look at the different areas in the Rogers Center, the different ways revenue is generated at the Rogers Center once you're in the stadium. Right, the Yankees started doing this with the Mercedes Club in the outfield and all that. Outfield seats are cheap. Bleacher seats are cheap. Not if you want to be a member of the Mercedes Club, you know, then you're going to pay a little more. So yeah. I think baseball teams have realized that there are so many ways to unearth value inside the park and from their franchise that whole notion of the sport is dying has become less of an issue. And the other thing demographically that I don't think people talk about enough, is, you know what? We're getting older as a society, right? That birth rates are going down. We're living longer than we have. So the idea that somehow being a quote older person sport is a bad thing, that may not be true.
Yeah,
that may
not smoke
be
cigarettes
as true
in the stadium
as it
anymore. So it's like, yeah, we're the new era of people.
But you know what I mean?
Of course.
I think baseball has. I don't think it's anything baseball did. Yeah, the rules changes have been great, but I think it's just.
That didn't fundamentally change things. That didn't bring in new fans where they went, oh, well, I was going to watch,
exactly.
But it's 3.5 hours, and now it's only 2.5 hours. Okay, now I'm a baseball fan. Like, yeah, it just made it more digestible for an audience that has a million different things pulling it in a million different directions so that now you could actually give a night to a baseball game and not feel like it could end up absorbing, 4 hours of your life. So
and the other
I'm
thing,
totally with you on that.
Yeah, the other thing, JD, and I know I apologize for the time I'm taking up here, but this is a really fascinating topic. The other thing that I think has really helped baseball is the advent and the marketing and the connection with legalized sports wagering because it's the perfect sport for it, right? You can bet pitch by pitch. Now, obviously, I'm telling JD something. But, you know, it's like I think that there was a Sloan Sports Management Conference a couple of years ago, and I always remember this because Brian Burke tells a story about all the commissioners were on stage, and they were talking about the impact of, you know, legalized gambling in sports, and Rob Manfred's up there, and, baseball has – we've got this history with the Black Sox, and we always have to be aware of gambling, and one of the first rules you see in a clubhouse is you shall not wager on a game, da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And Adam Silver looked at him and said, Rob, you've got the perfect game for sports sports wagering. Like, literally every action in your game could be subject to sports wagering.
Yeah.
And
you see seats where they've got, like, the little tablet now in those sections where you can just sit there and gamble immediately. You've got...
And not every... That's not for everybody, but you know what?
Of course
it's
not.
For a whole hell of a lot of people, especially people around the ages of 25 to 35 who are really into that. And I think that's the other thing that baseball has figured out is, and there may be hiccups, but by and large, I think for baseball, the benefits are far going to outweigh the negatives. So, I'm with you. I think it's in a pretty good place, and that's why I really think that a lot of the stuff we're going to hear leading up to the next CBA is largely tactical. I think it'll be. I think there's nothing Major League Baseball owners would like better than to have the Major League Baseball Players Association turn into the National Football League Players Association, where it's basically, you know, it's basically an arm of the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, no professional athlete, no group of professional athletes has less say and less sway in their game than NFL players. They just don't. And I think that's ultimately the goal of the Major League Baseball owners is to turn the MLBPA into that. They'll never get rid of it, and they can't get rid of it. Legally, they can't get rid of it. But if you can really chip away at it and reduce it to sort of less of a union and more of an association, then I think they'll have accomplished what they wanted to do.
Well, they're already accomplishing it with the way that the salary structures are going now, right? Where your team is like, you've got Vladdy, and then you have Addison Barger, right? You have Ernie Clement. It's basically becoming a league like the NFL where, yeah, you pay the stars a ton of money. Like Joe Burrow gets $250 million. And then the defensive tackle who's playing, you know, 80% of the snaps, but on a rookie contract, we love him, but then he's up for a new deal. It's like, okay, yeah, no, see you later. We're just going to draft somebody else. We got 7 rounds of the NFL draft. We're going to use all these picks to replenish our team. And we feel like we can get by. This is I would say detrimental part of the war game, which is always figuring out, hey, okay, this guy's great. Everybody loves him, but what's the war that we're going to end up losing going to a guy that's on essentially a minimum contract? And so when you've got a labor force with drastically different interests where, yeah, those guys on the rookie deals are now becoming the majority. They're like, yeah. We're fighting something that's very different for the game than the Devers, the Vladdies, and the Shoheis of the world. So,
yeah,
and my guess is when you're talking about it, that's going to go their way. Baseball's way, I mean.
Certainly, and this is not meant to in any way to be disrespectful to veteran baseball players now, but there aren't the Tom Glavins, the Pedro Martinez's, the Mark Loretta's, anymore, the guys who were really solid MLBPA guys who would go into clubhouses and say, listen, you know, cut the BS. This is what this is all about. You know, this is, you know, we're fighting for stuff that these guys fought for. And they just...
Right, the deeply principled outlook of the future.
Exactly.
Of the game.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you know, talking about Curt Flood and Mike Marshall and the reserve clause, all this. I mean, you've lost a whole generation of guys who could go in and really make the historical case. The guys, if we stay together, we win. There's a reason we don't have a salary cap. There's a reason we have guaranteed salaries. Unlike the NFL, there's a reason that when you sign a 3-year contract for $45 million, you're going to get $45 million. Over the life of the contract. And that concerns me a little bit because I just don't I don't think there's that next group of union, I wouldn't say agitators, but guys who can go in and make the case in the clubhouse, right? At the level of the player, at the level of the Addison Bargers, the Ernie Clements, and the Vladdy Juniors, right? This is why we are doing this. I just don't think those guys exist anymore. And that's, again, that's something that the commissioner's office and major league owners are going to take advantage of.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Blair, I ate up a lot of your time, especially considering you got more work today. I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for doing this.
No, this is fun. Thanks for doing this. Yeah. Thanks for asking me. Yeah. Have a great weekend.
Take care, man. Yeah, you too. Jeff Blair of Blair & Barker. Yeah, I think he said basically what he's saying there is a theme that I touch on a lot on the show, which is young people suck. they're not going to be as passionate about it. No, I get it, though. You got a more disconnected labor force. You've got people that, probably a little bit more isolated and more selfish and more invested in their own self-interest than, I think that's everywhere. So I can see what he's saying. I really hope, though, that selfishly, as a sports fan, that we don't end up with a league that has a salary cap. I, especially in this market, it, I get it from what he was saying with for a lot of years, there were Blue Jays fans that were advocating for a salary cap because they were in this American League East that felt insurmountable. You had the BJ Ryan team, for those of us that are old enough to remember, with, you know, the AJ Burnett. Oh, they spent money 1 year. Benji Molina. Oh, they won a whole bunch of games. He was like 88 games and he still missed the postseason. And that was frustrating. You felt like there was no way around it other than to flatten the playing field. But the Blue Jays have become one of those teams. I would say that the Blue Jays now are ahead of the Red Sox in terms of team you would rather be in a salary cap less era. Red Sox are cheap. They won't pay Mookie Betts. That's pathetic. Blue Jays aren't doing that. They're not letting a Mookie Betts go in the organization without offering him. Like, it's maybe he leaves, but it ain't going to be over money. And that's why the Vladdy contract, again, you can be disappointed in Vladdy right now. And you can say, hey, he's got to pull his weight more. And man, if I kind of wish that the guy would have more than 12 home runs. Be nice if he was hitting more homers than Bo Bichette and Addison Barger, who's gotten 150 less plate appearances or more. Sure. But in terms of the actual contract of it, he represents something that you love, which is, as long as this contract's on the book throughout his prime, this team is going to be relevant in this, in spending. They're not going to go away. They're not going to become a team where it's Vladdy and a bunch of bums. It's not the model. If you win, even if you don't, look at this last, 5 years. Okay, some guys have gone. Like, they couldn't afford Semien. He ended up getting a huge contract. They probably were a little too cheap with Teoscar Hernandez and misread that. But ultimately, you're able to keep taking cracks by spending money. You have these misses in free agency that have happened with this team. Look at this year. Right now, again, things have worked for them. But having a George Springer on your books and not saying, oh, we got to dump this because he's getting old, has paid dividends in you having one of the best hitters in the American League. And allowing for you to account for a mistake like Anthony Santander has been so far. Spending money on your other starting pitchers, guys who have been remarkably consistent, maybe not aces anymore in Gausman and Berríos or Bassett, but having those kind of guys is, yeah, giving you the flexibility to endure not getting a Scherzer. Anyway, subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, reach out anytime on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Quick break, and I want to talk about why I do not want the Leafs to make a mistake. That's next. I haven't really touched on it because whatever, it's little rumors and you look at it and go, okay, I guess it would be cheap. But I don't understand this. The team's trying to beat the Florida Panthers. That's like the bar, right? And yeah, okay, maybe you can't make a move. Maybe you can't make the trade that you want to right now. There's a lot of things that I don't think are working for them in terms of the market being their prospect pool or who's available or the desperation for other centers in the league and top six wingers in the league, but Jack Roslovic is 3 goals in 45 playoff games. Yeah, I know he's a dish first guy, but he's like, got healthy scratch last year on the team that loves that type of player. I'm not buying that his chemistry is going to be better with Austin Matthews because he played with him internationally a bunch of years ago than Max Domi is going to be when we've seen that actually work out throughout regular season play. If you're going with that model, you're going with that formula, I think you've kind of already got the guys that you need on the roster. Anyway, subscribe to the pod. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. We'll see you tomorrow with Matt Murray.